Nothing, sir. I guess, like I said, anything that happened is no more than what she asked for. I can see that it wouldn't be right for her to be accusing the minister of something wrong when he didn't do nothing wrong. No more than it was right for Claudine to do the same. Fitch swallowed. No, sir. No more right than that. Dalton returned to his chair. I'm glad we understand each other. I'll call you if she becomes a problem. Hopefully that won't be necessary. Who knows? Perhaps she will think better of such hateful accusations. Perhaps someone will talk some sense into her before it becomes necessary to protect the minister from her wrongful charges. Perhaps she will even decide that butchering work is not for her, and she will go off to work on a farm or something. Dalton idly sucked on the end of the pen as he watched Fitch pull the door closed behind himself. He thought it would be interesting to see how the boy handled it. If he didn't, then Rowley surely would. But if Fitch handled it, then all the pieces would fall together into a masterful mosaic. Chapter 40 Master Spink's boots thunked on the plank floor as he strode among the benches, hands clasped behind his back. People were still sobbing about the Ander women, sobbing about what was done to them by the Haken army. Fitch thought he'd known what the lesson was going to be, but he was wrong. It was more horrible than he could have imagined. He could feel his face glowing as red as his hair. Master Spink had filled in a lot of the sketchy parts of Fitch's understanding of the act of sex. It had not been the pleasurable learning experience he had always anticipated. What he had always viewed with longing was now turned to repugnance by the stories of those Ander women. It was made all the worse by the fact that there was a woman to each side of him on the bench. Knowing what the lesson was going to be, all the women had tried to sit together to one side of the room, and all the men had tried to sit on the other side. Master Spink never much cared where they sat, but when they filed in, Master Spink made them sit where he told them, man, woman, man, woman. He knew everyone in the penance assembly, and knew where they lived and worked. He made them sit all mixed up next to people from somewhere else, so they wouldn't know the person next to them so well. He did that to make it more embarrassing for them when he told the stories of each woman and what was done to her. He described the acts in detail. There wasn't a lot of sobbing for most of it. People were too shocked by what they heard to cry, and too embarrassed to want to call attention to themselves. Fitch, for one, had never heard such things about a man and a woman, and he'd heard a lot of things from some of the other scullions and messengers. Of course, the men were Haken overlords, and naturally, they weren't at all kind or gentle. They meant to hurt the Ender women, to humiliate them. That was how hateful the Hakens were. No doubt you are all thinking, Master Spink went on. That was so long ago, that was ages ago, that was the Haken overlords. We are better than that now, you are thinking. Master Spink's boots stopped in front of Fitch. Is that what you are thinking, Fitch? Is that what you are thinking in your fine uniform? Are you thinking you are better than the Haken overlords, that the Hakens have learned to be better? No, sir, Fitch said. We are no better, sir. Master Spink grunted and then moved on. Do any of you think the Hakens nowadays are outgrowing their hateful ways? Do you think you are better people than in the past? Fitch stole a glance to each side. About half the people tentatively raised their hands. Master Spink exploded in rage. So, you think Hakens are nowadays better? You arrogant people think you are better? The hands all quickly dropped back into laps. You are no better. Your hateful ways continue to this day. His boots started their slow thump, thump, thump as he walked among the silent assembly. You are no better, he repeated, but this time in a quiet voice. You are the same. Fitch didn't recall the man's voice ever sounding so defeated. He sounded as if he was about to cry himself. Claudine Winthrop was a most respected and renowned woman. While she was alive, she worked for all people, Hakens as well as Anders. One of her last works was to help change outdated laws so starving people, mostly Hakens, were able to find work. Before she died, she came to know that you are no different than those Haken overlords, that you are the same. His boots thumped on across the room. Claudine Winthrop shared something with those women of long ago, those women I've taught you about today. She shared the same fate. Fitch was frowning to himself. He knew Claudine didn't share the same fate. She died quick. Just like those women, Claudine Winthrop was raped by a gang of Hakens. Fitch looked up, his frown growing. As soon as he realized he was frowning, he changed the expression on his face. Fortunately, Master Spink was on the other side of the room, looking into the eyes of Haken boys over there and didn't see Fitch's startled reaction. We can only guess how many hours poor Claudine Winthrop had to endure the laughing, taunting, jeering men who raped her. We can only guess at the number of cruel, heartless Hakens who put her through such an ordeal out there in that field. But by the way the wheat was trampled, the authorities say it must have been between 30 and 40 men. The class gasped in horror. Fitch gasped, too. There hadn't been half that number. He wanted to stand up and say it was wrong that they didn't do such vile things to Claudine, and that she deserved killing for wanting to harm the minister and future sovereign, and that it was his duty. Fitch wanted to say they'd done a good thing for the minister and for Andereth. Instead, he hung his head. But it wasn't 30 to 40 men, Master Spink said. He pointed his finger out at the room, sweeping it slowly from one side to the other. It was all of you. All you Hakens raped and murdered her. Because of the hate you still harbor in your hearts, you all took part in that rape and murder. He turned his back to the room. Now get out of here. I've had all I can stand of your hate-filled Haken eyes for one day. I can endure your crimes no longer. Go, go, until next assembly, and think on how you might be better people. Fitch bolted for the door. He didn't want to miss her. He didn't want her to get out into the street. He lost track of her in the shuffle of others hurrying to get out, but he did manage to squeeze to near the head of the line. Once out in the cool night air, Fitch moved off to the side. He checked those who'd left before him and rushed out to the street, but he didn't see her. He waited in the shadows and watched the rest of the people coming out. When he saw her, he called her name in a loud whisper. Beata halted and looked over. She peered into the shadows trying to tell who it was calling her name. People pushed past to get down the path, so she stepped off it, closer to him. She no longer wore the dusky blue dress he liked so well, the dress she had worn that day she went up to meet the minister. She now had a wheat-colored dress with a dark brown bodice above the long flare of skirt.
Beata, I have to talk to you.
Fitch, she put her hands on her hips.
Fitch, is that you?
Yes,
he whispered. She turned to leave. He snatched her wrist and yanked her into the shadows. The last of the people hurried off down the path, eager to go home and not interested in two young people meeting after assembly. Beata tried to wrench her arm free, but he kept a grip on it, and he dragged her farther into the black shadows of the trees and bushes to the side of the assembly hall.
Let go, Fitch, or I'll scream.
I have to talk to you,
he whispered urgently.
Come along.
She instead fought him. He dragged and pulled until he at last reached a place deeper in the brush where they wouldn't be seen. If they were quiet, no one would hear them either. Moonlight fell across them in the gap of brush and trees.
Fitch, I'll not have your filthy Haken hands on me.
He turned to her as he let go of her wrist. Immediately, her other arm came around to strike him. He'd been expecting it and caught her wrist. She slapped him hard with her other hand. He slapped her right back. He hadn't hit her very hard at all, but the shock of it stunned her. A Haken man striking anyone was a crime, but he hadn't hit her hard at all. It wasn't his intent to hurt her, only to surprise her and make her pay attention.
You have to listen to me, he growled. You're in trouble.
In the moonlight, he could clearly see her glower.
You're the one in trouble. I'm going to tell Inger you dragged me in the bushes, struck me, and then you've already told Inger enough.
She was silent a moment.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm leaving. I'll not stand here and have you strike me again now that you've proven your hateful Haken ways with women.
You're going to listen to me if I have to throw you on the ground and sit on you.
You just try it, you skinny little eel. Fitch pressed his lips tight as he tried to ignore the sting of the insult.
Beata, please, please just listen to me. I have important things I need to tell you.
Important. Important to you, maybe, but not important to me. I don't want to hear anything you have to say. I know what you're like. I know how you enjoy.
Do you want to see the people working for Inger get hurt? Do you want Inger to get hurt? This has got nothing to do with me. I don't know why you think so low of me, but I'll not try to talk you out of it. This is only about you.
Beata folded her arms with a huff. She considered for a moment. He glanced to the side and checked through a gap in the brush to make sure no one on the street was watching. Beata smoothed her hair back above an ear. As long as you don't try to tell me what a fine young man you are in your fancy uniform, like those overlord beasts, then talk. But be quick about it. Inger has work for me. Fitch wet his lips. Inger went to the estate with the load today. He went because you refused to deliver to the estate anymore. How do you know that? I hear things. And how did you going to listen? You are in a lot of trouble and a lot of danger. She put her fists on her hips but remained silent, so he went on. Inger figures you got taken advantage of at the estate. He came and demanded something be done. He's demanding the name of the ones responsible for hurting you. She appraised him in the moonlight. How do you know this? I told you I hear things. I didn't tell Inger any of that. Don't matter. He figured it out on his own or something, I don't know. But the important thing is, he cares about you and he's hot for something to be done. He's got this idea in his head that he wants justice done. He's not going to let it go. He's set on causing trouble over it. She sighed irritably. I should never have refused to go. I should just have done it, no matter what might have happened again to me. I don't blame you, Beata. If I was you, I might have done the same. She eyed him suspiciously. I want to know who told you all this. I'm a messenger now, and I'm around important people. Important people talk about what's going on around the estate. I hear what they say, that's all, and I heard about this. The thing is, if you were to say what happened, people would see it as you were trying to hurt the minister. Oh, come on, Fitch. I'm just a Haken girl. How could I hurt the minister? You told me yourself that people are saying he'll be the sovereign. Have you ever heard anyone say anything against the sovereign? Well, the minister is almost to be named sovereign. How do you think people will take it if you had your say about what happened? Do you think they'd believe you're a good girl and telling the truth and the minister was lying if he denies it? Anders don't lie. That's what we're taught. If you say anything against the minister, you'll be the one marked a liar. Worse, a liar trying to do harm to the minister of culture. She seemed to consider what he said as if it were an unsolvable riddle. Well, I'm not going to, but if I did say anything, the minister would admit what I said was the truth, because it would be. Anders don't lie. Only Hakens are corrupt of nature. If he said anything about it, he would admit the truth. Fitch sighed in frustration. He knew Anders were better than them, and that Hakens had the taint of an evil nature, but he was beginning to believe that Anders weren't all pure and perfect.
Look, Beata, I know what we've learned, but it isn't always exactly true. Some of the things they teach don't make sense. It isn't all true.
It's all true, she said flatly.
You may think so, but it isn't.
Really? I think you just don't want to admit to yourself how disgusting Haken men are. You just wish you didn't have such a depraved soul. You wish it wasn't true what Haken men did to those women long ago and what Haken men did to Claudine Winthrop.
Fitch wiped his hair back from his forehead.
Beata, think about it. How could Master Spink know what was done to each of those women?
From books, you dolt. In case you've forgotten, Anders can read. The estate is full of books that...
And you think those men who were raping all those women stopped to keep records? You think they asked the women their names and all and then wrote it all down just right so there would be books listing everything they did?
Yes, that's exactly what they did. Just like all Haken men, they liked what they did to those women. They wrote it down. It's known. It's in books.
And what about Claudine Winthrop? You tell me where the book is, what tells about her being raped by the men who killed her.
Well, she was. It's obvious. Hakens did it, and that's what Haken men do. You ought to know what Haken men are like, you little...
Claudine Winthrop made an accusation against the minister. She was always yearning over him and acting interested in him. Then, after she caught his eye and she willingly gave herself to him, she decided to change her mind. She started saying he forced himself on her against her will, just like what really happened to you. Then, after she started telling people such vicious lies that he raped her, she ended up dead.
Beata fell silent. Fitch knew Claudine was only trying to make trouble for the minister. Dalton Campbell told him so. What happened to Beata, on the other hand, wasn't willing. But even so, Beata wasn't trying to make trouble over it. Crickets chirred on as she stood in the darkness staring at him. Fitch glanced around again to make sure no one was close.
He could see through the brush that people were strolling along the street. No one was paying any attention to the dark bushes where the two of them were. Finally, she spoke, but her voice didn't have the heat in it anymore.
Inger doesn't know anything, and I've no intention of telling him.
It's too late for that. He already went to the estate and got people stirred up that you was raped there. Got important people stirred up. He made demands. He wants justice. Inger is going to make you tell who hurt you.
He can't.
He's Ander, you're Haken. He can. Even if he changed his mind and didn't, because of the hornet's nest he swatted, the people at the estate might decide to haul you before the magistrate and have him put an order on you to name the person.
I'll just deny it all.
She hesitated.
They couldn't make me tell.
No?
Well, it would sure make you a criminal if you refused to tell them what happened. They think it's Haken men who did it, and so they want the names.
Inger is an Ander, and he said it happened.
If you didn't tell them what they asked, they'd likely put you in chains until you changed your mind.
Even if they didn't, at the least, you'd lose your work. You'd be an outcast.
You said you wanted to join the army someday, that it's your dream.
Criminals can't join the army. That dream will be gone. You'd be a beggar.
I'd find work. I'd work hard.
You're Haken. Refusing to cooperate with a magistrate would get you named a criminal. No one would hire you. You'd end up a prostitute.
I would not.
Yes, you would.
When you got hungry and cold enough, you would. You'd have to sell yourself to men, old men. Master Campbell told me the prostitutes get horrible diseases and die.
You'd die like that from being with old men who...
I would not. Fitch, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Then how are you going to live? If you get named a Haken criminal for refusing to answer a magistrate's questions, how are you going to live? And if you did tell, who would believe you? You'd be called a liar. And that would make you a criminal for lying about an Ander official. That's a crime too, you know, lying about Ander officials by making false accusations.
She searched his eyes for a moment.
But it's not false. You could vouch for the truth of what I say. You said you wanted to be the seeker of truth, remember? That's your dream. My dream is joining the army, and yours is being a seeker of truth. As someone who wants to be a seeker, you'd have to stand up and say it was true.
See? You said you'd never tell, and now you're already talking about telling.
But you could stand up with me and tell the truth of it.
I'm a Haken. You think they're going to bleed two Hakens against the Minister of Culture himself? Are you crazy?
Beata, no one believed Claudine Winthrop, and she was an Ander, and she was important. Besides, she made the accusation to try to hurt the minister, and now she's dead.
But if it's the truth...
And what's the truth, Beata?
That you told me about what a great man the minister was? That you told me how handsome you thought he is? That you looked up at his window and sighed and called him Bertrand? That you was all twinkly-eyed as you was invited up to meet the minister? That Dalton Campbell had to hold your elbow to keep you from floating away with delight at the invitation to meet the minister, just so he could tell you to relay his message that he liked Inger's meats?
I only know what you and he...
Maybe you got demanding after.
Women sometimes later get that way, from what I hear. Demanding. After they act willing, then they sometimes make accusations in order to get something for themselves. That's what people say.
For all I know, maybe you was so thrilled to meet him, you hiked up your skirts to show him you was willing, and asked him if he'd like to have you. He never said anything to me. All I got from you was a slap. Maybe for seeing you was having yourself a good time with the minister when you was supposed to be working. For as much as I know about it, that could be the truth.
Beata's chin trembled as she tried to blink the tears from her wet eyes. She dropped to the ground, sat back on her heels, and started crying into her hands. Fitch stood for a minute, dumbly wondering what he should do. He finally knelt down in front of her. He was frightfully worried at seeing her cry. He'd known her a long time, and he'd never even heard stories of her crying like other girls. Now she was bawling like a baby. Fitch reached out to put a comforting hand on her shoulder. She shrugged the hand away. Since she wasn't interested in being comforted, he just sat there on his own heels and didn't say anything. He thought briefly about going off and leaving her alone to her crying, but he figured maybe he should at least be there if she wanted something.
Fitch, she said between sobs, tears streaming down her cheeks. What am I going to do? I'm so ashamed. I made such a mess of it. It was all my fault. I tempted a good Ander man with my vile, wanton, Haken nature. I didn't mean to. I didn't think I was, but that's what I did. What he did is all my fault. But I can't lie and say I was willing when I wasn't, not even a little. I tried to fight them off, but they were too strong. I'm so ashamed. What am I going to do?
Fitch swallowed at the lump in his throat. He didn't want to say it, but for her sake, he had to tell her. If he didn't, she was liable to end up like Claudine Winthrop, and he might be the one who would be called on to do it. Then everything would be ruined, because he knew he couldn't do that. He'd be back in the kitchen, scrubbing pots, at best. But he'd do that before he'd hurt Beata. Fitch took her hand and gently opened it. He reached in his coat pocket. In her palm he placed the pin with a spiral end, the pin Beata used to close the collar of her dress, the pin she had lost up on the third floor that day.
"Well, as I figure it, you're in a pack of trouble, Beata. I don't see as there's any way out of it but one."
Chapter 41 Teresa smiled.
"Yes, please."
Dalton lifted two dilled veal balls from the platter held out by the squire. The Haken boy genuflected, spun with a light step, and glided past. Dalton set the meat on the charger he shared with Teresa as she nibbled on her favorite of suckling rabbit. Dalton was tired and bored with a lengthy feast. He had work of importance that needed tending. Certainly, his first responsibility was tending the minister, but that goal would be better served handling matters behind the curtain of governance than on stage nodding and laughing at the minister's witticisms. Bertrand was waving a sausage as he told a joke to several wealthy merchants at the far end of the head table. By the merchants' guttural laughter and the way Bertrand wielded the sausage, Dalton knew what sort of joke it was. Stein particularly enjoyed the body story. As soon as the laughter died down, Bertrand graciously apologized to his wife and asked that she forgive his joke. She let out a titter and dismissed it with an airy wave of a hand, adding that he was incorrigible. The merchants chuckled at her good-natured indulgence of her husband. Teresa gently elbowed Dalton and whispered,
"What was that joke the minister told? I couldn't hear it."
"You should thank the Creator he didn't bless you with better hearing. It was one of Bertrand's jokes, if you follow."
"Well," she said with a grin, "will you tell me when we get home?"
Dalton smiled.
"When we get home, Tess, I'll demonstrate it."
She let out a throaty laugh. Dalton picked up one of the veal balls and dragged it through a wine and ginger sauce. He let her have a bite and lick some of the sauce off his finger before putting the rest in his mouth. As he chewed, he turned his attention to three of the directors across the room, engaged in what looked to be a serious conversation. They gestured expansively while leaning in, frowning, shaking their heads, and holding up fingers to make their point. Dalton knew what the conversation concerned. Nearly every conversation around the room involved a similar topic, the murder of Claudine Winthrop. The minister, wearing a purple and rust-striped close-fitting sleeveless jerkin over a golden wheat-patterned sleeved doublet, draped his arm over Dalton's shoulders as he leaned close. The white ruffs at the minister's wrist were stained with red wine, making him look as if he were bleeding from under the tight sleeve.
"Everyone is still quite upset over Claudine's murder," said Bertrand.
"And rightly so." Dalton dipped a mutton cube in mint jelly. "It was a terrible tragedy."
"Yes, it has made us all realize how frail is the grip we have on the ideals of civilized behavior we so cherish. It has shown us how much work yet lies before us in order to bring Hakens and Anders together in a peaceful society."
"With your wise leadership," Teresa said with genuine enthusiasm as Dalton ate the mutton cube, "we will succeed."
"Thank you for your support, my dear."
Bertrand leaned just a little closer to Dalton, lowering his voice a bit too.
"I hear the sovereign might be ill."
"Really?" Dalton sucked the mint jelly off his finger.
"Is it serious?"
Bertrand shook his head in mock sorrow.
"We've had no word. We will pray for him,"
Teresa put in as she selected a slender slice of peppered beef.
"And for poor Edwin Winthrop,"
Bertrand smiled.
"You are a most thoughtful and kind-hearted woman, Teresa."
He stared at her bodice, as if to see her kind heart beating there behind her exposed cleavage.
"If I am ever stricken ill, I could ask for no more noble a woman than you to pray to the Creator on my behalf. Surely, His own heart would melt at your tender, beseeching words.
Teresa beamed. Hildemara, nibbling on a slice of pear, asked her husband a question, and he turned back to her. Stein leaned in to converse with him about something. They all pulled back when a squire brought a platter of crisped beef. As Stein took a handful of the crisped beef, Dalton glanced again at the directors, still engaged in their discussion. He scanned the table opposite them and caught the eye of Franca Gowanlock. The woman's face told him that she was unable to detect any of it. Dalton didn't know what was wrong with her powers, but it was becoming a serious impediment. A squire held a silver platter toward the minister. He took several slices of pork. Another came with lamb and lentil, which Hildemara favored. A steward poured more wine for the head table before moving on. The minister enfolded a husband's arm around Hildemara's shoulder and spoke to her in a whisper. A server entered, carrying a large basket piled high with small loaves of brown bread. He took it to the serving board to be transferred onto silver trays. From a distance, Dalton couldn't tell if there was any problem with the bread. A large quantity of it had been declared unfit for the feast, had been consigned for donation to the poor. Leftover food from feasts, usually great quantities of it, was distributed to the poor. Master Drummond had had some sort of trouble down in the kitchen earlier in the day with the baking of the bread. Something to do with the ovens going crazy, as the man described it. A woman was badly burned before she could be doused. Dalton had more important things to worry about than baking bread and hadn't inquired further.
Dalton, the minister said, returning his attention to his aide, have you managed to prove out any evidence about the murder of poor Claudine Winthrop?
On the other side of the minister, Hildemara looked keenly interested in hearing Dalton's answer.
I've been looking into several promising areas, Dalton said without committing himself. I hope to soon reach conclusion to the investigation.
As always, they had to be circumspect when they spoke at feasts, lest words they would not want repeated be carried to listening ears. Gifted listeners other than Franca might be present and having no trouble with their ability. Dalton, to say nothing of Bertrand and his wife, didn't doubt that the directors might be using the gifted.
Well, the thing is, Bertrand said, Hildemara tells me some people are getting quite concerned that we aren't taking the matter seriously enough.
Dalton began to offer evidence to the contrary, when Bertrand held up a hand and went on.
Of course, this isn't true at all. I know for a fact how hard you've been working on apprehending the criminals.
Day and night, Teresa said. I can assure you, Minister Chanbur, Dalton is hardly getting any sleep of late, what with how hard he has been working since poor Claudine's murder.
Oh, I know, Hildemar said as she leaned past her husband to pat Dalton's wrist in a show for Teresa and any watching eyes. I know how hard Dalton has been working. Everyone appreciates all he is doing. We know of the great number of people he has brought in to be interviewed for information. It's just that some people are beginning to question if all the effort is ever going to produce the guilty party. People fear the killers still among them and are eager to settle the matter.
That's right, Bertrand said. And we, more than anyone, want the murder solved, so as to have the peace of mind that our people can rest safely again.
Yes, Hildemara said, with a cold glint in her eye. It must be solved.
There was no mistaking the icy command in her tone. Dalton didn't know if Hildemara had told Bertrand what she had ordered be done with Claudine, but it wouldn't really matter to him. He was finished with the woman and had moved on to others. He wouldn't mind at all if she cleaned up his mess behind him and silenced any potential trouble. Dalton had been expecting that the minister and his wife might grow weary of the people complaining before the people grew weary of talking about the murder of a prominent woman from the estate. As a precaution, he already had laid plans. It looked as if he was to be forced into them. His first choice would be to wait, for he knew the talk would soon die down and the whole matter would be forgotten, or at most people would occasionally click their tongues in passing sorrow, and perhaps even titillation. But Bertrand liked to be seen as competent in his office. The toll on others was only a minor consideration to him. To Hildemara it was irrelevant. Their impatience, however, was dangerous.
I, as much as anyone, want the killers found, Dalton said. However, as a man of the law, I am bound by my oath of office to be sure we find the true killers, and not simply accuse someone falsely just to see someone punished. I know you have sternly given me this very caution in the past,
Dalton lied for any listening ears. When he saw Hildemar about to object to any delay, Dalton added in a low, suddenly ill-humored tone, "Not only would it be wrong to be so hasty as to falsely accuse innocent men, but were we to rashly charge men with the crime, and after the sentence it turned out the mother confessor wished to take their confessions, and she found we had sentenced innocent men, our incompetence would be rightly denounced, not only by the mother confessor, but the sovereign and the directors as well." He wanted to make sure they fully grasped the risks involved. "Worse, though, should we sentence men to death and carry out the executions before the mother confessor was allowed to review the case, she might interject herself in a way that could not only topple the government, but see top officials touched by her power as punishment." Bertrand and Hildemar sat wide-eyed and silent after Dalton's quiet but sobering lecture. "Of course, Dalton, of course you're right." Bertrand's fingers fanned the air in a motion like a fish wriggling its fins to swim backward. "I didn't mean to give the impression I meant any such thing, of course. As minister, I cannot allow a person to be falsely accused. I wouldn't have such a thing happen. Not only would it be a terrible injustice to the ones falsely accused, but in so doing, it would allow the real killers to thus escape to kill again." "But that said," a tone of threat returned to Hildemar's voice, "I think you must be close to naming the killers. I've heard such good things about your abilities that I suspect you are merely being thorough. Surely the minister's chief aide will soon see justice done. The people will want to know the Minister of Culture is competent. He must be seen as effective in seeing this through to resolution." "That's right," Bertrand said, eyeing his wife until she eased back into her seat. "We wish a just resolution." "Added on to that," Hildemar said, "there is talk of a poor Haken girl recently being raped. Rumors are spreading rapidly about the rape. People think the two crimes are connected." "I heard whispers of that too," Teresa said. "It's just terrible." Dalton might have guessed Hildemar would have found out about that and want it cleaned up too. He had been prepared for that eventuality as well, but hoped to skirt the issue if he could. "A Haken girl. And who is to say she's telling the truth? Perhaps she is attempting to cover a pregnancy out of wedlock and is claiming rape so as to gain sympathy in a time of heightened passions." Bertrand dragged a slice of pork through a small bowl of mustard. "No one has yet come forward with her name, but from what I've heard, it is believed to be genuine. People are still trying to discover her name so as to bring her before a magistrate." Bertrand frowned with a meaningful look until he was sure Dalton understood that they were talking about the butcher's girl. "It is feared not only to be true, but to be the same ones who attacked Claudine. People fear the same criminals have now struck twice, and fear they will be striking again." Bertrand tilted his head back and dropped the pork in his mouth. Stein, on the other side of Hildemar, watched the conversation with growing disdain as he ate crisped beef. He, of course, would solve the matter quickly with his blade. Dalton would, too, were it that simple. "That is why," Hildemar said as she leaned in once more, "the crime must be solved. The people must know who is responsible." Having delivered the order, she straightened in her chair. Bertrand squeezed Dalton's shoulder. "I know you, Dalton. I know you don't want to come out and say it until you have the whole crop sheafed, because you are too modest. But I know you have the crime solved and will soon announce the killers. And before people go to the trouble of hauling a poor Haken girl before a magistrate, after she has obviously already suffered in this, it would be a shame for her to suffer further humiliation." They wouldn't know, but Dalton had already talked to Fitch to start the rock down the hill. He could see, though, that he was going to have to give it a push himself in a new direction. Stein, over on the other side of Hildemar, tossed his bread on the table with disgust. "This bread is burned," Dalton sighed. The man enjoyed his foolish outbursts. He was treacherous to ignore, lest, like a child, he'd do something to get attention. They had been leaving him out of the conversation. "We had trouble of some sort with the ovens down in the kitchen," Dalton said. "If you don't like dark bread, cut off the burned crust."
"You have trouble with witches," Stein roared. "And you talk about cutting off the crust? That is your solution?"
"We have trouble with ovens," Dalton said through gritted teeth, As he cast a wary glance to the room to see if anyone was paying attention to the man, a few women, too far away to hear, were batting their lashes at him. "Probably a plugged flu run. We'll have it fixed tomorrow."
"Witches!" Stein repeated. "Witches have been casting spells to burn the bread here. Everyone knows that when there's a witch in the neighborhood, she can't resist casting spells to burn bread."
"Dalton," Teresa whispered. "He knows about magic. Maybe he knows something we don't."
"He's a superstitious person, that's all." Dalton smiled at her. "Knowing Stein, he's playing a joke on us."
"I could help you find him."
Stein tipped his chair back and began picking his nails with his knife.
"I know about witches. It's probably witches that killed that woman and raped the other. I'll find them for you since you can't. I could use another scalp for my cape."
Dalton tossed his napkin on the table as he excused himself from Teresa. He rose, strode around the minister and his wife, and leaned close to Stein's ear. The man stank.
"I have specific reasons for doing things the way I have them planned," Dalton whispered. "By doing it my way, we will get this horse to plow the field for us, pull our cart, and carry our water. If I simply wanted horse meat, I wouldn't need you. I'd butcher it myself. Since I have already warned you before to watch your words, and you seem not to have understood, let me explain it again in a way you will understand."
Stein's grin showed his yellow teeth. Dalton leaned closer.
"This is a problem partly created by you and your inability to make gracious use of what is offered you freely. Instead, you saw fit to force a girl who wasn't offering or willing. I can't change what's done. But if you ever again speak out of turn in such a way as to cause a sensation, I will personally slit your throat and send you back to the Emperor in a basket. I will ask him to send us someone with more brains than a rutting pig."
Dalton pressed his boot knife, hidden in the palm of his hand with only the very tip exposed, to the underside of Stein's chin.
"You are in the presence of your superiors. Now clarify to the good people at the table that you were only making a crude joke. And Stein, it had better be convincing, or I swear you will not survive the night."
Stein chuckled agreeably.
"I like you, Campbell. You and I are much alike. I know we're going to be able to do business. You and the minister are going to like the order. Despite your fancy dancing at dinner, we are the same."
Dalton turned to Hildemara and Bertrand.
"Stein has something to say. As soon as he finishes, I must go see to some new information. I think I may have uncovered the names of the killers."
Chapter 42. Fitch hurried along the dimly lit corridor. Rowley had told him it was important. Morley's bare feet thumped against the wood floor. It sounded odd to Fitch now. Having never worn boots, it had taken Fitch time to get used to the way they sounded. Now bare feet sounded odd to him. Beyond odd, it was a sound that reminded him of being a shoeless scullion, and he didn't like to be reminded of that part of his life. Being a messenger was like a dream come true. Through the open windows, the sounds of the music at the feast drifted in. The woman with the harp was playing and singing. Fitch loved the pure sound of her voice as she sang along with her harp.
"Got any idea what this is about?"
"No," Fitch said. "But I wouldn't think we would have messages to take this time of night, especially when there's a feast going on."
"I hope it doesn't take long."
Fitch knew what Morley meant. They'd only just settled down to get drunk. Morley had found a nearly full bottle of rum, and they were looking forward to getting drunk out of their minds. Not only that, but Morley had a wash girl he knew who said she'd like to get drunk with them. Morley told Fitch that they should let her get drunk first. Fitch was panting at the implications. Besides that, and just plain liking to get drunk, he wanted to forget his talk with Beata. The outer office was empty and had a hollow quiet to it. Rowley hadn't returned with them, so there was just the two of them. Dalton Campbell, pacing slowly with his hands clasped behind his back, saw them and waved them in.
"There you both are, good. What can we do for you, Master Campbell?"
Fitch asked. The inner office was lit by lamps, giving it a warm feeling. The window was open, and the light drapes glided to and fro in a light breeze. The battle flags rustled a little in the breeze. Dalton Campbell let out a sigh.
"We have trouble. Trouble about the murder of Claudine Winthrop."
"What sort of trouble?"
Fitch asked.
Is there anything we can do to fix it?
The minister's aide wiped a hand across his chin. You were seen. Fitch felt an icy wave of dread tingle up his back.
Seen? What do you mean?
Well, you remember you told me you heard a coach stop, and then you all ran off to that pond to dunk yourselves? Fitch gulped air.
Yes, sir.
Dalton Campbell sighed again. He tapped a finger against the desk as he seemed to consider how to put it into words. Well, the coach driver was the one who found the body. He turned back to get the city guard.
You told us that already, Master Campbell, Morley said.
Yes, well, I have only just learned that before he left, he had his assistant remain behind. The man followed your trail through the wheat. He followed you to the pond.
Dear spirits,
Fitch breathed.
You mean he saw all of us swimming and washing ourselves clean?
He saw you two. He's just now named your names, Fitch and Morley, he said, from the kitchen at the estate. Fitch's heart was hammering out of control. He tried to think, but panic was welling up around his ears faster than he could tread it. Good reason or not, they would still put him to death.
But why didn't this man say something before if he saw us?
What? Oh, I guess he was in shock over the sight of the body and all, so he... Dalton Campbell waggled a hand.
Look, there's no time to discuss what's already happened. We can't do anything about that now.
The tall Ander pulled open a drawer. I feel terrible about this. I know you two have done good work for me, for Andereth, but the fact remains you were seen. He took a heavy leather pouch from the drawer and plunked it down on the desk.
What's going to happen to us? Morley asked.
His eyes were the size of gold sovereigns. Fitch knew how his friend felt. His own knees were trembling as he tried to imagine how they would execute him. A new terror rose up inside his throat, almost pushing out a scream. He recalled Franca telling him how that mob put a rope around her neck and pulled her up to build a fire under her while she was strangling and her feet were kicking in the air. Except Fitch didn't have any magic to help him get away. He reached up and felt the coarse rope around his neck. Dalton Campbell slid the leather pouch across the desk.
I want you two to take this.
Fitch had to concentrate to understand what Dalton Campbell had said.
What is it?
It's mostly silver. There is some gold in there, too. Like I said, I feel terrible about this. You two have been a big help and have shown me you are to be trusted. Now, though, with someone having seen you and able to identify you as being the ones, you would be put to death for killing Claudine Winthrop.
But you could tell them.
I can tell them nothing. My first responsibility is to Bertrand Chanbor and the future of Andereth. The sovereign is ill. Bertrand Chanbor could be called upon to become the new sovereign any day. I can't throw the whole land into chaos over Claudine Winthrop. You two are like soldiers in a war. In war, good people are lost. Besides, with emotions over this running so strong, no one would listen to me. An angry mob would drag you away and... Fitch thought he might faint. He was breathing so fast he was near to passing out.
You mean we're to be put to death?
Dalton Campbell looked up from his thoughts.
What?
No.
He pushed at the leather pouch again.
I told you, this is a lot of money. Take it.
Get away. Don't you understand? You must get away or you will be put to death before the sun sets again.
But where will we go? Morley asked.
Dalton Campbell waved a hand toward the window.
Away. Far away. Far enough away that they will never find you.
But if it could be cleared up somehow so that people knew we was only doing what had to be done.
And raping Beata? You didn't have to rape Beata.
What?
Fitch said with a long breath.
I would never. I swear I would never do that. Please, Master Campbell, I wouldn't.
It doesn't matter what you would never do. As far as the people after you are concerned, you did it. They're not going to stop so that I can reason with them. They won't listen. They think the same people who raped and killed Claudine raped Beata, too. They won't believe you, not when a man can identify you as the ones who killed Claudine Winthrop. Whether you raped Beata or not doesn't matter. The man who saw you is an Ander.
The people after us?
Morley wiped a trembling hand over his pallid face.
You mean to say there's people already after us?
Dalton Campbell nodded.
If you stay here, you will be put to death for both crimes. Your only chance is to get away, and fast. Because you've both been such dependable men for me, and served so well in the cause of Andorith culture, I wanted to warn you, so you could have a chance to escape, at least. I'm giving you my life savings to help you escape.
Your savings?
Fitch shook his head.
Oh, no, sir, Master Campbell. We'll not take your savings. You have a wife, and...
I insist. If necessary, I will order it. The only way I'll be able to sleep at night is knowing I could at least help you in this small way. I do whatever I can to take care of my men. This is the least I can do for you two brave men. He pointed at the leather pouch. Take it. Split it between you. Use it to get far away. Start a new life.
A new life?
That's right, Master Campbell said. You could even buy yourselves swords. Morley blinked in astonishment.
Swords? Swords?